welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Well, we've got a crew of one, and if you don't mind waving for the video portion of the show, Chief. We have Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief. Thanks so much for being on the show. We've been covering this stuff for many years, and now he's joined our show, and we absolutely love having Chief Schultz on the show. Also, a shout-out to our sponsors. We have Gauls.com, our title sponsor, ComplianTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. Also, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, arm sponsor. We have Gunlearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. Thanks to them, we're streaming to over a million followers right now on social media. Also, TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. And if you guys hadn't noticed, the chief is wearing some of that stuff. And that mug he's got. Yeah, he's got that special Leo Roundtable mug. So thanks for showing that off, chief. Appreciate it. Also, FishOrlandoBass.com. You know, Zach has got a bass fishing charter in Orlando. So, guys, when you're taking the wife and the kids or the grandkids to the Disney, you now have options. Hook up with Zach at FishOrlandoBass.com. Do that bass fishing charter. That can be, if you have other guys to go with, that can be a lot of fun or a family event. And I've got some fond memories of doing bass fishing charters. And also alligator hunting. If you want to catch and relocate alligators, that could be a lot of fun. We're talking about the famous Florida alligator, you know. So Chief Schultz, we're trying to get him to go and represent the show and film everything. And we'll have a body cam on him. We may have more than one just in case. If he loses one limb, we still want to have at least another limb with a body cam on it so we can still get some more footage. So you know what I mean, Chief? No offense.
I just need one hand as long as I can manage a coffee cup.
You're good to go. All right. So, hey, FishOrlandoBass.com. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our contact, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and our very own Travis Yates with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? You know, the first topics are usually main topics. They have a tendency to be a little bit deeper, and this one fits that bill. It's titled John Roberts and Congress Need to Immediately Stop Gross Ethical Violations by Federal Judges. Now, I just ran across this article, but number two, we have Chief Schultz on the show, and he's a doctor. So this is deep enough to intrigue him, I think. And we haven't talked about it before the show, but I try to pick topics that will challenge the chief because, you know, when he goes places, he doesn't get challenged a lot because he's a doctor, you know, but I want to challenge him and I want to have something deep enough for him to really sink his teeth into. I think that this topic might be able to do it. And it's actually pretty well written. I was pretty impressed with the article. So we'll be covering that one. Also, Washington police debut. I'm sorry to laugh when I say this. So guys, disclaimer, we're talking about Washington, you know, state, which is where, of course, they have, you know, Spokane and they have Seattle. Washington police debut a dialogue unit to respond to protests and events with large crowds. So yeah, they've got a special dialogue unit. We're going to be talking about that. Then Lima police, they released footage of a shootout that injured an officer during a traffic stop. Then we got a guy accused of threatening to kill kill kids while he's armed with a big knife, and he ends up being double tased before being arrested. And so when I say double tase, he gets hit by two tasers at the same time. You can barely hear the separate deployments, but they're essentially launched at the same time. And this is after he cut his father, and then he's going to go after the kids. So it's a wild one. And we've also got, unfortunately, two first responders and a volunteer killed in separate incidents that were connected to the same event, the H-Town Throwdown. We'll talk about that. Then East Hartford officers shooting at a suspect driving a vehicle that rammed a cruiser, and they're saying it was justified. And, you know, that's important because, you know, both cops shot as the vehicle was driving away. Then Fresno police released footage of an officer striking an armed suspect with a patrol car. That's pretty fancy driving there, Chief. He just barely missed that yellow concrete pole. I thought that cruiser was going to hit it. That was a precision. That would have been like the pit precision immobilization technique without the immobilization. You know, it was just like pristine. So if you're ready, Chief, let's cover the deep topic first. I want to challenge you, Chief, and this is my goal today. TheFederalist.com, John Roberts and Congress need to immediately stop gross ethical violations by federal judges. So I'm going to try to get through this quickly. We're talking about code of conduct. And look, a lot of people me included, we don't necessarily know everything under the judgeship hat. I mean, look, it's one thing to be an attorney, right? And you've got all these ethical codes and things and standards that you have to abide by. We understand it from a law enforcement perspective, which puts us a step closer than many, but we still don't necessarily get everything. And then when you throw the judgeship on, that's a whole nother can of worms, let's say. So in a recent New York Times article, and remember, this is the New York Times, which is normally a pretty, you know, liberal article or publication, dozens of inferior, and they use the word inferior court judges too, which I love, dozens of inferior court judges violated the code of conduct for United States judges by taking pot shots at the Supreme Court's emergency docket. That's the way they start off. Now, the author is a guy named Mike Davis. Some judges call Supreme Court reversals demoralizing, while others whined that the Supreme Court's reversals, at the very least, created the perception of partisanship on the part of the justices. And as the Supreme Court mostly has been reversing rulings that had gone against the Trump administration policies, and they've been reversing them in favor of Trump. And so these judges are implying that it's being done because they are improperly siding with them or playing partisan politics. One judge compared the relationship between the justices and the judge's district to, quote, a war zone. Now, Article 3 of the Constitution establishes the hierarchy with the judicial system. At the top is the Supreme Court. Then they kind of break it down. You've got your Supreme Court's the final arbiter, and then you've got the head of the judicial branch. It's the sitting president is the head of the executive branch. That's kind of like a correlation of the comparison between the two. It talks about the framing of the Constitution, but I want to go in and jump down to where, you know, it gets to the nuts and bolts of this. You know, as a judge, whether you're an appellate judge and you've always got, you know, your appellate courts, you've got your Supreme Courts for the individual states, you've got the federal system where you've got the U.S. Supreme Court, SCOTUS, but no judge ever wants to have their decisions reversed or get spanked publicly. I mean, even if you're, I'm sharp enough to know that even if it's just an appellate judge that's doing that, you know, you just don't want to get egg on your face. So they talk about the gripping of inferior court judges. It stems from about two dozen rulings on the Supreme Court emergency docket. So only two dozen of these, but the docket allows justices to pause orders from lower courts while the litigation is going through the process. And radicals are trying to grind to a halt President Donald Trump's electoral mandate. Repeatedly, they run to district courts in leftist hellholes. They're not holding back, like the District of Columbia, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, New York City, and Boston. So they're not playing around. The Supreme Court has correctly reversed an absurd inferior court orders issued by judges who refuse to accept that President Trump is implementing an agenda for which the American people voted. So he's doing what at least, well, really, he won the popular vote. So arguably more than half the country wanted done. Now, on a side note, every judge who responded to questions from the Times, because the Times did a survey, and there's a lot of judges that responded, but they did it anonymously. And they're saying this is an act of cowardice. And the judges, they hid themselves in the shadows for one reason: ethics enforcement. They put their names to the comments, or are putting their names to the comments. If they would have signed their name, they would have been trashing the Supreme Court, and they would have rightly been subjected to inferior court disgraces, to a torrent of ethics complaints. And so they say, you know, what they're doing, you know, is not any better. And lastly, the recommendation: Chief Justice John Roberts needs to get his judicial house in order. The latest New York Times drive-by shooting by anonymous federal judges and the most recent blatant example of out-of-control rogue judges sabotaging the federal judiciary, the presidency, and the American voters. Out of more than 400 judges who receive requests for comment, nearly 20% responded, this is shameful, unacceptable, and startling. Our federal judiciary has been politicized and weaponized, and they want justice to issue an order ordering judges to stop doing it, and they want Congress to levy severe consequences against these, what they call judicial embarrassments, and to put some teeth in there. So we've got about a minute and a half, Dr. Schultz.
Well, you may recall I was a municipal judge for 6 years, and so I've
got.
Oh,
that's right. The gavel.
But, I mean, you talk about inferior courts. It's low level, and I was a non-lawyer judge. Colorado allows county and municipal courts to allow lay people to serve in those roles. But neutrality is really important, and even in court like mine, the city court that, you know, doesn't handle felonies, you still have to have neutrality, and you know, to to make snide remarks or implied remarks that disrespect the Supreme Court and other superior courts is just inappropriate as well as unethical, because it taints the neutrality that people need to expect as they go into the courtroom. And, you know, we can, when we come back from your first break, we can talk about these emergency dockets and what that is and why we have had so many of them when, you know, most of us probably had never heard of that except for in cases of capital punishment.
Well, perfect timing, Chief. And we're time for our first commercial break. So, guys, stick with us. It's about to get really, really good. We got some great topics and stories for video components. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we all know we can get our gear from a lot of different places. And then they throw the online mix, right? The choices are almost limitless. But I want to remind everybody here about what's really important and the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. And even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do. In spectacular fashion. Not only that, they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for a sponsor, police support or title sponsor, because they do support law enforcement, Gauls at Gauls.com. And they're going to do you one better. For the loyal listeners of the show, they're going to give you a radio code through me. I'm going to give it out in just 1 second, and it'll allow you to get 15% off your next order. It is radio15. So type in radio15 in order to get 15% off your next order at Gauls.com. And they have gift cards. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card, and they will be your new best friends, Gauls.com. All right, guys, now it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. They're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they call their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product we all know by now is called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me. When it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on approaches that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com, and make sure you watch those cool videos. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief, and we have been talking about a very interesting New York Times article from, you know, just talking about the liberal judges that are weighing in and basically complaining about the U.S. Supreme Court. A lot of them are doing it anonymously, so there's no ethics violations, and just talking about the Chief Justice Roberts putting the house in order. Dr. Schultz.
Well, you know, when these judges are selected and they have to be approved by Congress, they try not to show their colors too much. And even if a conservative president appoints the conservative judge, they can't be like way right or way left, because Congress has to approve. So, and, you know, and they get lifetime appointments, and that's a good thing, because it's supposed to isolate them from political influence. But if they go in with a bias and that leaks out, it's just not good for justice. And when you look at the judge shopping that goes on, you see that there's a parallel, and you see several justices or several judges are rising to the top in terms of frequency of decisions. And there has been, you know, there needs to be some eyes on all of this. I don't mind the public debate about it. Because these emergency dockets, which had typically historically been for last minute, you know, phone calls on death penalty cases, you know, the guy's going to get executed in 4 hours and you got to get a couple of justices together. And now these district judges are making national prohibitions. And my understanding is that the emergency docket is usually to issue stays or to stop the orders from going into effect. And so most of them are still going to have to be litigated at some point. So it's not really an overturning per se But it's like, okay, let's stop this. And if you want to press it, then we'll let it go to Supreme Court, you know, 4, 5, 6 years from now. So it effectively kills it. But it's a disturbing trend when we lose the neutrality in the courts. That is a pillar of judicial integrity. And if that gets to be eroded, then public confidence gets eroded. Then we start seeing people avoiding the courts. You know, the courts are historically, going back to merry old England, were designed to bring parties together and solve problems so that individuals don't have to solve the problems themselves. It was designed so that people don't have to resort to violence or vengeance. And so if we lose confidence in the courts, we're going to see more and more people doing an end round around the justice system and solving problems in ways that the court system is designed to avoid. That's a apocalyptic presumption, but I think that might be where we're headed if we don't get back to neutrality.
Well, good concept. And I mean, we could always remember Judge Boasberg. He's been in the news a lot lately, and of course there may be some impeachment going on in Congress involving him. So, yeah, very disappointed in a lot of the rhetoric and the displays that some of these judges have been exhibiting. So hopefully they'll get it in order. So,
well, lawfare has become part of the recipe in our current democracy, and we also have somebody in the White House who is pushing the boundaries of presidential authority, and so we don't mind having courts look at that and say, is he operating within the Constitution? But again, you have to look, what does the law say? What does the law say? It doesn't matter if I'm mad at the law. It doesn't matter if I'm mad at the plaintiff or the defendant or the administration. What does the law say? Let's make a neutral ruling and operate on that basis.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Well, look, moving along, are you ready to go to Washington State?
Yeah, as long as it's from a distance, we can make commentary without having
I promise. GlobalOrdinance.com. Washington Police debuted the dialogue unit to respond to protest events with large crowds. I wonder if they have like a water boy portion of the dialogue unit where they just have they pass out water and stuff and maybe give food and sandwiches to the protesters. But they don't look like other police officers wearing light blue uniform shirts under black vest. They appeared noticeably different than other police wearing the standard black uniform as they intermingled with the thousands of people that were marching during Saturday's No Kings protest when that happened recently. When crowds began marching, the groups of two officers in blue began walking with them. They would occasionally engage in small conversation with the protesters, speak to the organizers about their plan, or communicate to other officers to tell them what roads to block in order to stop traffic so the demonstrators could safely pass by. And it goes on to say, those guys, the officers wearing the light blue among the crowd at protests in Spokane, they're members of the department's tactical team designated to manage large crowds, but they're not called the TAC unit. They're not really a TAC unit. They're part of the department's evolving dialogue unit. They're specifically trained to engage with protesters and organizers, and they don't engage with weapons. It's a new strategy the department rolled out earlier this year. And it goes on to say that instead of the typical way people might see, look at police at protest, Spokane's dialogue officers, they focus on mixing into the protest by establishing positive connections, building rapport, and talking with participants, and helping people exercise their First Amendment rights. I wonder if they're taking knees too. I don't know. That's the mindset of the team as well. And we talk about it a lot, according to Spokane Police Lieutenant Kyle Rogolin. He said in April, after returning from a dialogue policing conference, he said, quote, people are out here to share their message, and we're here to help support that, unquote. So are they on to something good and new, Dr. Schultz?
I don't know if they're wearing just blue shirts or whether they also have a bluebird on their shoulder, because it just, seems like a rainbow and unicorn kind of thing. You know, if it works, it works. And I'd be all for it. The hitch in that, if there is one, is that, first of all, they want to brag about the No Kings protest. It was very clear that people involved in the No Kings protests were instructed not to be confrontive. And so Spokane might want to take credit for that being peaceful, but it was the organizers who made that decision, just like it's their own decision whether to engage more aggressively or not.
All right, excellent. And perfect timing. Guys, we're up for our second commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, introducing Aero Defense by Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about one of the doctor's favorite subjects, long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision demands perfection because settling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit AeroPrecisionUSA.com for a lineup that matches every discipline because they basically have something for everybody. And you know, back since 1994, they've been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with soulless bolt actions. And that's not all. Their M4 E1 Pro and Mod 4 handguards, they hit the market last year at AeroPrecisionUSA.com. The embodiments of duty rifle excellence now being tailored for the civilian customer. That means that now you guys can start getting your hands on this primo stuff. And their M5 AR-308 platform, nothing short of spectacular. So don't settle for less. We need to have the best. Head over to AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block. I'm your host. We've got Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief, on the show. We've been talking about the Spokane, Washington dialogue unit, and that's the way they roll whenever they have protesters. And they didn't say rioters, but look, I hope that they're not replacing their intelligence unit with stuff like this. And look, I know from Tampa, we got it. There's a lot of great things going on in Tampa, and it's big enough to where we've got Tampa's like a small city with big city politics. And so, yeah, we've always got undercovers and that have infiltrated these groups. We know what's going on, what they're planning, and any decent sized agency should have an intel unit. So I'm hoping that Spokane is operating off of that assumption. I don't know if a lot of these, there's so much goes on in these liberal jurisdictions, Chief. Sometimes it makes me wonder if they have good intelligence on if and when people are going to be doing things, so that you can kind of try to, spearhead it off. But I don't know. They always seem to do that there.
Well, there are a couple of things I'll say before we end this topic. First of all, any special unit is going to have to claim success. Otherwise, they lose their funding and their assignment. So if you're in a community relations position or a co-responder position, you've got to claim success. And we have to have a little bit of a jaundiced eye to see whether they can really put some metrics to say that, yeah, we're successful. It's worth the diversion of resources from active uniform street cops, because that's where all these specialty units come from. You got to take somebody away from the patrol car and put them in that specialty unit. So, and the other thing is this overall misunderstanding about riot control. We have judges saying you can't use tear gas. And that's ridiculous. You know, tear gas is not punitive. It's designed to move masses of people away from a dangerous place. It's not, there's a reporter, boom, boom, let's, pop this a tear gas canister at him. So, and the idea that it's riot gear instead of protective gear. Matt, I've said this on the show before. I'm kind of like a storm chaser when it comes to riots. I've been to several of them. And I remember at the Ferguson riots where I was live on the street, did a ride along the St. Louis County Police. There were guys out there instructed by higher ups who were in the thick of the, not the active riot going on, but a real tense situation downtown where the burnout buildings were. And they had no protective gear at all, no gas mask, no shin guards, no helmet because of PR. And, we don't fuss at firefighters for putting on their bunker gear and their oxygen tanks and their protective helmets. But, man, you put protective gear on a police officer, the theory is that you're going to start a riot just because you look so aggressive. It just makes people want to burn buildings down. And it's just ridiculous and dangerous. And there's a certain amount of preemptive action that needs to take place in riot situations. You don't just wait until you've got fights going on and bricks thrown at you and urine filled glass bottles thrown at you and buildings being burned down. You got to do something ahead of that at some magic point where you can head off some of these really destructive things. And so, you know, the whole science of, if there is such a thing, of crowd control and riot control is thoroughly misunderstood by politicians and many judges. And in Portland, I was there for their riots. The judge says, you can't put a camera on these crowds. Like, okay, they're all filming you, but wow, you can't put a camera on them to protect their identity. And it's just, you know, you need that. You need that intel. You need that evidence. So I don't know how that's going to get educated to the people that make the policy.
Well, in the meantime, it's good news for us, and we'll keep covering it. Chief, I'm going to take these stories with video components in order, unless you want me to take anything out of order. I was going to start off with the Lima police, the shootout that injured an officer during a traffic stop, if that's okay. And it's on.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one.
Yeah. So I, you know, I'm getting better at stacking these stories. In the beginning days when you weren't on the show, Chief, I try to pick topics that I think will be good. And I bring a topic up and there'd be like crickets, like nobody talking, you know. So at least for the most part, it doesn't happen, you know, anymore. But this one certainly is going to be worthy of some interaction. Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. Lima police released footage of a shootout that injured an officer during a traffic stop.
What? Get who out of here? What guys? What they? What? Hold on a second. Hold on. Get him out. Hold on. Shots fired. Shots fired. I'm hit.
And I think that my show notes are longer than the article notes on this thing. During a traffic stop on October the 31st, which of course we all know that's Halloween, right? Emerson Jeffrey, our bad guy, allegedly fires a handgun at officers and he injures an officer. Officers return fire, neutralize the threat. Jeffrey, at this point, was still in the hospital under law enforcement supervision, and the injured officer was in stable condition, and there was a passenger in the car that was also treated and released. The Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation, they were conducting an independent investigation to the use of force, and the Lima Police Department, which is the agency, also conducted a separate criminal investigation. But that was not for the officer, but for the suspect's actions. Now, just according to my show notes here, the male officer, there's a male and female officer. The male officer is conversing with the suspect driver during the traffic stop. And the female officer is on the passenger side, and there's another male officer ahead of her. So she's right around where the passenger door would be. And the male officer is like up in front of like the right front quarter panel of the vehicle, but it's dark. So he's really kind of hard to see. And again, we have our first male initial contact officer on the driver's side, and he's just talking, you know, with the driver. Remember, there was a female passenger in there somewhere too that you can't really tell until she exits the car later after the fireworks happen. So right about the 4 minute mark, the male officer, you know, he's talking and he turns away and he starts to walk away from the driver. Suspect seizes the opportunity, starts shooting, hits the officer. Police return fire, and at 4 minutes and 30 seconds, which is 30 seconds later, you can see what appears to be a male suspect crawling out of the passenger side of the vehicle, yelling in pain. So it's our bad guy, and he's been hit. And so that's at 4:30. About a minute and a half later, the screaming's going on, and then finally the first backup officer gets there. But he parks right up in front of the driver's door, the bad guy's car, not the optimal place to be rolling up, especially when you know that there's a shootout going on or was going on and that people are armed. And the female that was in the car, she flees out the driver's side of the door. And then, you know, at 6:30, about a minute and a half after the backup arrives, you've got a group of officers that are approaching from the front of the bad guy's car. Bad guy had crawled out on the passenger side, remember? So they're trying to engage him. And as they're approaching from the front of the bad guy's car, we're watching from the dash cam. So that's the patrol car behind the bad guy's car. But these guys are engaged in the bad guy. Shots are fired all over again. You got shots fired at 6:30, then another string of fire at 6:48 as officers approach the bad guy. And so that's about the nuts and bolts of what happens. Chief Schultz.
Wow. You must have rewound that like I did several times to figure out what's going on, who's shooting who. And on these videos, I usually try to count the shots. I'm not sure what that does, but I'm always interested in how many shots are fired. Yeah. And man, I lost track. I mean, this was a full blown shootout. I wrote an article. I got a lot of flack for it, but I wrote an article a while back with Police One about the limitations of passenger side approach. I'm a big advocate. You know, it's still, even though it's pretty routine practice, it still sets people, they're still looking out the driver's side, you know, waiting for the cop to come up, and you kind of surprise them and you can see things in the back seat. So I'm an advocate, but you don't always have solid ground. You don't always have a good place to retreat from. And it often is, you've got a slope so that you're at a little bit of a tactical disadvantage in terms of your positioning. So I don't know how much that played in, but for those officers that are choosing and rightfully so to do a passenger side approach, just understand there's some limitations. You might trip over a curb that you wouldn't normally, have in a driver's side approach.
That's interesting that you say that, Chief, because the female officer on the passenger side, when the shooting started, what did she do? She ran backwards, and she didn't run behind the patrol car. She cut between the two cars, and uh-huh. And she ran ran to the driver's side, which is where the shooting, started. So that, I found that very unusual that she crossed between the two cars and went where our male officer ended up getting shot. She went on his side of the car and crossed between the two.
You know, I've talked about tactical disengagement and redeployment. I saw the retreat, but I don't know what those officers did. I don't blame them for retreating and ducking, but I don't know what they did after that in the mix of uniforms. There was a little, the initial impression is, are you just running away or are you redeploying in a way that's going to more effectively address the situation? I can't, without more information, I can't really say. Also that spotlight is designed to light up the interior of the car. If you put it on where you're going to be, there are pros and cons to that, but you're going to have some blindness from that light coming at you. You want the interior of the car lit up. And I do know the officer on the passenger side looked in, saw some suspicious movement and wanted to get that guy out. And that was a good move.
Well, it's already time for another commercial break, but guys, we're going to come right back to this one. Stick with us. There's some good stuff coming up. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the courses at huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and Gun Learn has been a trusted source since back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder is Dan O'Kelly, and if you have your own agency, he's got a deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Again, that's gunlearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief. We've been talking about a use of force involving a bad guy on a traffic stop, and as soon he's waiting for his opportunity, apparently, because we got three cops surrounding the car. And I got to say, the male officer that was on the passenger side in the front that kind of like disappeared because it was dark, I really never was able to see him again. I know that I never saw him come retreat back. So I'm assuming that he stayed in front of the car. But our bad guy, as soon as our officer turned away from the bad guy to walk away, and even though we had other officers there, maybe he felt a little bit more confident being able to do that, but that's when the bad guy seized the opportunity to shoot him. So just a little FYI, guys, when you're backing away, even if you have backup and they're there watching on the passenger side of the vehicle, they're watching the bad guy, always consider that bad guy, if he's a real bad guy, he's always processing his options, what he's going to do if that opportunity is going to present itself. And boy, I tell you, it didn't take him long. He seized that opportunity within a second that went down. Any final words on this one, Chief?
Well, just, we always preach this, and those of us that have made traffic stops, it gets to be routine. And this vehicle complied pretty quickly. I noticed that the lights were on. It wasn't a pursuit. You know, it didn't get anybody's adrenaline pumping. And until that passenger started acting kind of squirrely and kept his hands out of sight and wouldn't make eye contact with the officer. And like I said, the officer did the right thing to decide to get him out of the vehicle. It just
the passenger was apparent. Let me think about that now. Yeah, the passenger was the female and the male was the driver. And so I think after the shooting, he crawled out of the passenger side. But they said that he was the driver, that she was the passenger. And she did exit, though, out of the driver's door, though.
Who was in the back seat? Was that the shooter, the initial shooter?
No, there were only, from what I read in the article, there were two people in the car, the male driver, female passenger. But when he got shot, he crawled out the passenger side. It looked like it was the front door. And then she bailed out. It looked like it might have been the driver's door, but I couldn't be positive. But she certainly bailed out of the car on the driver's side. She opened one of the driver's doors, side doors, and just ran away. And no one, I didn't see anybody chase after her, but he was laying on the passenger side on the ground, got back up, and I couldn't tell whether he got partially back into the car again or not on the passenger side.
Well, let me just throw one little statistic at you before we move on. A lot of times we say call for backup, and we criticize officers who are in shootings and they could have, waited for backup. Most police shootings happen with more than one police officer on the scene. So we need to be careful not to be overconfident that, oh, I got a backup. This guy would certainly not make some kind of stupid move, but they do.
I was not aware of that, actually. So thank you. Yeah, that's good to know. And you know what? It kind of makes sense now that I hear that. I can see how that could be. Yeah. If I was a bad guy, I would prefer a one-on-one instead of engaging multiple officers. But if you're waiting for that opportunity to present itself, and you got maybe an officer just thinking, "Hey, I can get a little lax because there's more than one of us here. I'm not too worried about something going bad." That would make sense. So,
something to think about.
If you're ready for this next one, this is the double taser with the guy with the knife that was threatening the kids. So if you're ready to handle that one, that's a pretty interesting story.
Knife plus taser. Yeah, let's talk about that.
So rumble.com, this is Butter, our favorite law enforcement video channel. Man accused of threatening to kill kids while armed with a knife. He is double tased before being arrested.
I'm not going to shoot him if he drops the knife. Please, please. Drop the knife. Please, thank you. Get on the fucking ground. Get on the fucking ground. Get on the ground. Get on the fucking ground right now. Get on the fucking ground! Get on the fucking ground!
Put your hands up right fucking now!
Don't shoot him! You nigga.
Don't shoot him!
Use a taser, you nigga!
Fuck you, bitch!
Go ahead!
Fuck you!
Get on the ground!
I'll hold him, you
Don't
got him.
Your fucking hands, you hear me? Right hand out, do it now! Put it behind your back!
Left hand. Do it now.
Taser deployed. We're securing one.
You're good. Call for FD. Scene secure.
FD could come in. We've got one secured.
So again, this is making the people in my state look bad because we're in Deltona, Florida. All I can say is that it's not Tampa. It's east of Tampa, Deltona, Florida. Florida man accused of injuring his father with a hunting knife, and then he threatens to kill four children, and he spits on a deputy. According to the Volusia County Sheriff's Office, great agency, by the way, on Sunday, deputies responded to a home in Deltona. They got reports of a guy that was armed with a large hunting knife. He had injured one person, which I believe ended up being his father. And then he was threatening to kill four children that were inside the home. So deputies get there, and the first deputy arrives at the scene. The suspect's father is between the deputy and his son, who's a really pretty large dude, and he's got that hunting knife. But the father is concerned that the deputy is going to shoot his son, and I get it. And the deputy, I was pretty impressed with the way the deputy handled it, because the deputy did have his firearm out, and he told his dad, as long as he drops the knife, I'm not going to shoot him. Bad guy son throws the knife down on the ground. You see it bouncing, and the father walks away, steps out from between them. Deputy transitions, put the firearm away, and transitions to the taser, just like he told the father he was going to do. It was I was pretty impressed with that. Now body cam shows everything that happened. And so now the father's out of the way. Deputy's dealing one-on-one with the bad guy. And now we've got another deputy that arrives on the scene too. They are both giving direction to the bad guy, but only one at a time. I didn't find it too bad. Normally I just like one cop talking and the other one just shutting up and just watch a show, but they took turns, and I thought that was fine. So the deputy gave her telling the suspect to, he had already dropped the knife. He tells him to move out of the way. Dad complied. And so it kind of leaves the other stuff out. I'm looking at the article here, and they leave out some of the good stuff. As soon as his father steps away and the deputy transitions to his taser, it's only 33 seconds in. The suspect tells the officer that the backup officer that shows up, he says, F you, and he calls him a female dog. And then he flips him off. I mean, he does all these insults. And then that's about as much as he got out of his mouth before both deputies launched their tasers. And my little side note was, don't try this at home. And dude, this guy locks up, falls down, bam, the deputy gets on top of him. And that's another thing. The backup deputy hops on the bad guy immediately. I mean, the taser still might have been even cycling. It was beautiful. You know, a lot of times these guys tase him. No one wants to get close and get their hands dirty or touch the bad guy. And then he gets it because, you know, as soon as the taser does a five-second cycle, you feel 100% if you're the bad guy and you're ready to rock and roll again, you know. But this deputy, he didn't do a three-point pin. I didn't really like the way he straddled him on the top, because if the bad guy knew what he was doing, it would have been easy to have launched the deputy off of him. But we still, as far as I know, had at least one set of probes attached for the other officer that had the taser. He could have reactivated. It all worked out. And I was very impressed. They went in, handcuffed the guy immediately. Your thoughts, Chief?
Well, this kind of gave me a flashback to an incident that I had where a knife wielding guy typically the civilian calls, hey, this relative is going nuts. And then the cops get there and they don't want the cops to do cop things, you know. So you've got this complex but not unusual kind of dynamic where you have somebody who is kind of unaware of the lethality of this whole scenario and wants to get in and protect their loved one from what they think might be an overreaction on the officer. And I agree, the de-escalation and the dialogue, they could train the Spokane blue shirts to dialogue these guys out of stuff. But so, you know, it all went down well. I'm still always a little leery about knife versus taser. This guy got tased twice. He earned every millisecond of that ride, no doubt about it. But I would have been tempted to tase the dad, even though he was an innocent bystander. But yeah, if he could have moved out right at the beginning, yes, his son might have got shot, but the officers could have dealt one-on-one instead of having this distraction. But it's so very common for officers to have to deal with One bad guy and a lot of guys that you don't know whether they're bad guys or not. It's always surprising to me that the display of a weapon by a police officer doesn't cause people to immediately comply and back away. It's just not realistic enough to them for them to perceive that there's a real danger. So happy ending. I'm glad they got the guy down.
Yeah, I applaud the officers. Watching this, it brings back so many memories like you, Chief. Typical scenario, not an easy. It's a fast-moving scenario, very fluid. I was very impressed. Very impressed. These guys know what they're doing. They're very well trained. Moving in and arresting this bad guy as soon as he goes down, and not just standing there with taser probes hanging out of him and wires and stuff. These guys knew what they were doing, and good dialogue with the father, getting him to move out of the way. And at least the son knew from the verbalization from the officer that if he threw the knife down, that his chances of getting shot by the officer, if the officer kept his word, were going to be zero. And of course, the officer was a man of his word. I love so many things about this. I think it's a good video. Yeah. Well, that brings us about to, we're kind of winding it down. So Dr. Joel Schultz, thank you so much for bringing your expertise. Hey, and nailing that hard topic, the very first one, the main topic that we had about the judges, you did pretty good. And I forgot that you carry the gavel yourself. So, I love it. So thank you so much, Chief. Appreciate it. And guys, I usually take this opportunity to talk about the Wounded Blue, the woundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3, helping cops out in a world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. So if you haven't checked them out lately, please check out the Wounded Blue, the woundedblue.org. They're worthy of your support and at least looking into. A shout out to our sponsors. Guys, please support our sponsors. They go to the great links to bring the show to you. We have Gulls.com, our title sponsor, ComplianTechnologies.com, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.life, SafeGuardRecruiting.com, Two Bells. Check out the new online store that we have in FisherOrlandoBass.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.